Accession number 30644, Mr. Richard Sigorski, Reel 5. Now, just before we go on to your next posting, had you had any combat training of any sort, you know, at this stage? And what kind was there, if there was?
On that sort of plane, you don't need a combat training. You need navigation, you need to find out where to get, and then pull the lever to release whatever you've got.
Now, had you got any sort of formal bombing training then,
Remember that U-2 is the plane which has, six or eight bomb catches under the wing on each side of the plane. Maximum which you can lift was, I think, 400 kilos. So they were small incendiaries or something of that sort.
So did you actually do any dropping of these small incendiaries on
not
targets?
Not up to now. We've done it later in Gostomil.
Now, tell me about this next posting. So in late February, you go to Gostomil. Now, where's Gostomil?
Gostomil is about 20 kilometers north of Kiev. 25 kilometers north of Kiev, between Kiev and Chernobyl.
And you went there in February. Now, who were you joining there? February 44.
That was second wing Kraków.
So you still not yes. The training squadron. No. Were you with the squadron now, or still with the training squadron?
We were part of the wing now.
So which squadron were you in?
Third squadron.
Right. Sorry. Now, what was the composition of third squadron? I mean, how big was it?
The normal composition of Russian wing is three squadrons, 10 planes in the squadron, so the total is three squadrons, that 30 planes plus wing commander 31, his second in command 32 planes in the wing.
Now, what planes were you flying?
U-2s.
Still U-2s.
Still U-2s. We were flying U-2s to the second wing. Was flying U-2s to the end of the war.
Now, so what was your reception when you joined Third Squadron?
It was practically the same people, the same as in Grigorievskoye, because we were part of that wing, except we were training squadron and transfer. Yeah.
So, where were you living at Gostomil?
I'm not absolutely certain. If Gostomil was, there was a runway. If it was a pre-war Russian airfield or constructed by Germans, probably pre-war Russians.
Did it actually have a runway then?
It had a runway. You won't believe it. Yes, we had a runway.
Concrete or tarmac or something?
Hard runway. Don't remember. If it was concrete, probably tarmac of some sort.
But you can't remember your accommodation, what you were living
accommodation in? Accommodation were barracks. Normally built proper barracks. And we had, there was a number of buildings there, which when the Germans were kicked, were not destroyed. Kiev was not destroyed as well. Basically, as far as I remember, they put 500 kilos bomb in every in the major street, in the drains.
Who did?
Germans in Kiev. The major street called Krashtatyk. And then they blew Krashtatyk up. That was the only problem which German left in Kiev. Otherwise, it was practically untouched by war.
Now, so what did you do when you arrived at Gustavmil? How did you start, your
navigation, duties? Navigation training.
That was the big thing, was it?
Yes, flying, improving technique of flight. I've flown about, in Gustavmil, I flew about 30, 35 hours of flying, from what I remember.
It's a continuation training.
Continuation training.
Still, I mean, although you're with 3rd Squadron, you're still
same,
training.
Nothing was changed.
Anything new you were doing?
Absolutely none. It was all the same.
Anything happened while you were there?
Yes. One thing happened. Americans had a base about 100 kilometers southeast from us in Poltava.
P-O-L-T-A-V.
P-O-L-T-V-A. Poltava.
Now, what was that American base doing there? What were they doing there?
What was they doing? When they're flying from Italy or England, bombing Germany, they went straight through, refueled in Poltava. And
so it's a refueling base?
Refueling, rearming base. I think it was, from what I remember, it was the only one Americans or anybody except Russians had on the terrain of Russia.
Now, what about this? This was about 100 kilometers from you.
Something of that sort, yes.
And you were going to tell us a story about it.
Once upon a time, American fighter. Which was it? Long distance fighter. Come on. The only fighter Americans used for long distance. What was the name?
I'm not very good on American.
Oh, boy.
Mustang.
Mustang. Of course, Mustang. By the way, Mustang was designed by Americans for British specification and had a lousy engine. When they delivered it to UK, they changed the Allison Air, I think it was Allison. They changed the engine to Merlin, Rolls Merlin. And from that time, it was the best, fastest, longest distance plane, the best fighter of, I would say, the best fighter of the last war.
Now, tell us this story then about the
Well, Mustang. The American pilot lost his way somehow and landed in Gustavmil. Stayed with us for about a week before his crew came and refilled the plane and done necessaries. And it was Paul, American, in Russia. The only few words of communication we had was German. It was extremely funny. And Chuck Hofer, his name was.
So he was Polish-American?
No, he was American.
He was straight American?
Straight American.
And you were Poles and the rest were Russians?
Well, there were a few number of Poles, but basically Russia in Russian. Russians in Russia. And it was extremely funny. He was extremely good pilot. Extremely nice man. Slight digression. I moved to Ealing, and in Crescent was living an American fighter pilot, colonel, and I received a book, Eagles in the Sky, Americans, and 1st Squadron before America joined the war, which were flying from England. I've read that book and found a photograph of Chuck Hofer in it, of the pilot who landed in Gostomel. And the American colonel, Van something, he knew him very well. And then I learned that he was third highest American ace. By that time, he had 27 kills already. He died about a week or 2 weeks later. Somewhere over Romania or Ploiești, was blown by something impossible. He was flying at about 3 kilometers high, and there was one or two shots from Akak, and he was hit and died. Impossible for a fighter, that's completely fluke. Oh boy.
Now, anything else happened while you were at Gustamil?
Yes, we had an absolute flood, hurricane of some sort.
What was that like? Tell me about that.
What was like that? At that time, I was on the airfield in the group, starting group. It started raining so hard that you have to keep your head down to breathe. And after, it rained for about 15 minutes. After 10 minutes, the water was coming through the boots. On complete airfield. I never seen anything like it in my life. The biggest rainfall was hard to breathe.
Anything else?
Not really. Normal life.
There's no operations going on.
Not much operation. Standard flying, on navigational flying and training flying. But
the front was too far away for.
Front at that time was already in already in Poland. Remember when I moved, they were already in Poland. When we were
so
conscripted.
You didn't do any missions from
No. The distance of you to flying distance is, let's say, maximum 100 kilometers, and we were near Kiev.
So anything else? What do you remember of the time there? Anything else? Just to give us an idea of what life was like.
Life was like? Too much alcohol.
Well, tell me about that. Where were you drinking? Vodka. What were you drinking?
Vodka. What else? That was the only drink.
I mean, was this in the squadron bar or the mess, or were you going out?
Mess, food. By the way, it was funny part of it.
Hello. If you do the drinks first, we'll come to the food. You see what I mean? Tell me about the drinking. I mean, was this in the mess or in the town?
The mess didn't exist. That's think like mess. We didn't have at all. We could get hooch, and basically that's what we drank.
So you wouldn't go out into the bars?
There was no bars. You are talking about communist Russia. Bars? Forget it. Not in existence.
Now, had you drunk much before? Or
no, I never really drank a lot. I drank because everybody else did, and it was not to join. That was the only reason. And I hate alcohol. I don't drink at all, by the way. No. I never liked alcohol.
What about, you were going to tell me a story about food, the rations or the food.
Food was the best from the beginning of the war, which we had. It was... You can get white bread, butter, cocoa. The basic food which we had was svinnaya tushonka, that's called in Russian, produced in Chicago, by the way. It was
why was it so good there?
It was plenty, it was well made, It was in sand in tins. We had ham. Oh God, what's the name? How to translate it? Svinaya tushonka. I could translate it to Polish, which won't help you very much.
It's all right, don't worry too much. It'll come back to you.
Anyway, the food was perfect and as much as you had. Petrol was American. Uniforms were American. Transport were Jeeps and Dodges at that time. In the Russian army, you've got norms to which you are kept. Different food rations and so on. And the highest flying personnel and submarines were the highest norm which you can get. So we had absolutely everything. Everything there.
So how long were you there for?
We landed in Poland near Helm.
So hang on, when did you leave Gustamil then?
The Warsaw Uprising started on the 1st of January, February, March, May, April, May, June, July, August. In beginning of August, we landed in Poland.
So you left Gustamil around about July?
Yes. And July. No, it was beginning of August when we landed. Okay. Because
now,
we landed after...
Tell me the back. Where did you go to? Or tell me the background of the move.
Field near... Oh, God. Hell no. Near, not very far from Lublin.
Lublin, Lublin.
Yes.
So it was just an airfield without.
It was a field. Green field, pastures, which were made to land. We stayed there.
So did you fly there in your U-2s?
We fly there.
And anything about the flight there?
Nothing. We flew there. We stayed there for... But what made one of the aspects in Lublin made the biggest impression on me during whole of the war? It was... place called concentration camp called Majdanek. You must have heard of it.
Majdanek.
Yes,
now,
Majdanek.
Tell me about this. Well, how did you see this?
We went there to look. And there was, on the site of it, was a barn. A very large barn. Let's say about 6-8 meters wide, about 30-40 meters long and at least 6 meters high. And that barn was absolutely full of shoes. All sorts of shoes. Boots, shoes, ladies, gentlemen. And on top of it, in front, was absolutely full to the brim, were small children's shoes. About that size, very young children. Somehow, the quantity and amount those shoes made the biggest impression of murder which I've seen during the war.
Now, just to make this clear, this is a former German concentration camp. Presumably these have been
quite a large, between other things, but mostly Jewish, yes.
And the other.
Yes. It was.
Were the inmates still there, or was
no?
It
remember that was number of weeks after, few weeks, number of weeks after it was freed. They were freed.
Now you'd been moved to the Lublin area because of the Warsaw Uprising. Is that right? Could you fill in the background as you understood it of what was going on?
We knew by that time that the Warsaw Uprising is in progress.
Now, what did you understand to be happening, and what did you think of it?
Well, as it was AK, underground army, Polish underground army under command of Polish government in London, of course Poles were for it, 100% for it.
So you were 100% for it?
Absolutely, of course. And we stayed there for about...
Did you know what was happening?
No, not at the time.
Now what did not you do when you got to Lublin? Sorry.
Look, we went around very shortly after we were transferred to our operational field.
Oh God.
Our operational field. Wolarowska.
That's V-O-L-A, and then separate
that's
word.
In Polish it would be W.
And Rzaska yeah. is R-J...
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Wolarowska, W.
That's a W. Can you spell the second word? I can't actually read it.
R-O-W-S-K-I.
This was your operational
That
base.
Was operational field. It was an estate, about 60 kilometers southeast of Warsaw.
And was there anything there, or was it just a field?
It was a green field, of course. It was a green field, no runways, no nothing, but we didn't need runways for that plane. The weather was good, the ground was hard. There was no problems whatsoever.
Now, had you trained us flying in as a pair? Because they were two-seaters, these...
They were two-seaters. We had a...
So what were you? Were you the pilot?
I was a pilot. Pilot. There was pilot and navigator gunner.
So who were you with? I mean, did you have the same navigator gunner? I mean, were you a team, or were you...
Basically, yes. Czeslaw was his Christian name.
And was he the same rank as you? Was he another cadet, or I'm not sure whether you've been commissioned yet?
By now, we were commissioned. I was pilot officer.
Now, so what? He was your navigator gunner, was he?
Yes.
So what would he do?
I mean, not a lot. Look around and that's it. Basically, you had to navigate yourself. And very often, we on the actual combat missions, we flew together. Very often, we flown alone, without.
Now, so what happened when you got there? You got to Wolarowski.
We stayed and was doing absolutely nothing for a period of time. I met some people with the same outlook as myself.
Now who were these? The locals or
locals from AK, from underground army, and as I was Paul, after a short period of time. We found the same language. And then...
You were allowed to mix with them then?
Of course. Look, the people were there. The village was there.
Now, so when did you start operations? What do you remember of your first operation?
Before, we were told that we are going to do the drops on Warsaw.
Now, bombing, you mean? No, what do you mean?
Supply drops. Food ammunition and things of that sort. We received quite a lot of parachute bags. Quite a lot of food, buckwheat, for example, bread, pea soup packed in small squares, cubes rather, pepesha, submachine guns, pistolet, pulemiot.
So it wasn't just food?
No, it was as well anti-tank rifles, ammunition, and that was packed in the parachute bags. Then about a week, 10 days, don't remember exact dates, before beginning of drops, all the bags, parachute bags, were taken by probably commando by KGB, and everything was reloaded into normal bags in you can keep wheat or food bags.
So what is a parachute bag? I'm not quite sure what one of them is.
Bag which has a parachute. If you drops it, parachute opens. And
these were just bags. So
and
you just
those were ordinary bags without parachute,
so
without anything. So that just fell. It very easily could kill people like a bomb. Because it's heavy. The average bag was about 80, 90 kilograms a bag. Depends what was in it.
Now, why had the KGB or whoever taken them off?
My dear boy, everything we've done was 100%, 1,000% propaganda. What we done for Warsaw was absolutely useless, was complete waste of time, was to prove that they're doing something. By the way, two wings were dropping on Warsaw. Our second Polish was one, and 16 Russian under command of Major Leonov was second.
So the whole point was to be seen to be doing something.
To be seen to be doing, and the actual value of what was done was zero, or practically zero, let's say.
Why was it so little value? Was there just not enough of it?
No. Let us assume that in the past, you know the type of plane which we were using, which was a bloody Tiger Moss and nothing else, a practical equivalent of Tiger Moss. Hence, we were 60 kilometers, about 60 kilometers from Moscow. What I could do is, flying on the east side of Vistula, get between 900 and 1100 meters height. That's what I could scratch on the full engine power.
With the load.
With the load. Load, let's say.